Stardate 96704.89. You are listening to Star Trek Discovery Pod. My name is Mike Moody. With me is
Clyde Haynes
and
Grant Davis.
And we have a special guest. It is
Kenny Madison.
What's up, Kenny?
Hi, everybody.
You're a co-host of the Guilty Treasures podcast.
That's right. Yes. A podcast that is about all of the things that you hate to love.
That's not why you're here.
No, I love this show.
So do you guys not often get to talk about Trek because it just comes across a little bit too genuine?
Well, I don't exactly feel great whenever I talk about Star Trek. It's only very recently that I've actually found a group of folks to be able to watch Star Trek with, which is a weird feeling because I've just been the guy that has where everyone else has gone to go watch sports or do anything or be outside something that's really engaging and social. I'm like, cool, I'm just going to stick in my bedroom, going to hole up, and I'm going to watch Star Trek VI for like the 1,000th time. That's been me, and it's always been super personal.
Oh, you're going to fit in great here.
Great. Wonderful. Thank you.
You're one of us, sir.
Thank
Welcome.
You. Hello. It's good to be here.
Very happy to have you. And today we're going to talk about the fourth episode of Season 2 of Star Trek Discovery, An Obol for Charon.
Flowers for Algernon.
Close.
That title might have made more sense. I have no idea what the title means.
Well, we now know. Mike looked it up.
We do know. We'll get into it in a minute. First, I want to remind everybody to visit us at StarTrekPod.com. If you want to get in touch with us, you can find links to our Twitter, links to our Facebook. You can find our email address there at StarTrekPod.com. You can listen to every episode we've recorded. We covered all of Season 1. We've been covering all the Season 2 episodes weekly. And we also have a Patreon, don't we, Grant?
Yeah, patreon.com/StarTrekPod. Please go there and give us a $2 an episode pledge so that you can join us over on our private Slack channel. Slack is just a little chat group. So you can.
People know what the Slack is.
Well, some people might not know what Slack is.
Well, fuck them.
We want them. We
oh,
want
yeah,
them.
Yeah. Scratch that.
Eye on the ball. Eye on the prize here. We want these people to
give me the money.
Support us. And we would also like them to join us so we can nerd out and talk theories with them on our little discussion forum. So, yes, patreon.com/StarTrekPod. Go there if you want to help support this podcast that you love listening to and you've been listening to free and you're feeling a little guilty and you have that extra credit card cash that grandma gave you and you just want to, give that money to us.
Kenny, we need your money.
Okay, guys. Jeez, I'm sorry. Sorry I haven't joined your Slack yet.
Sorry, I was staring at you the entire time I said that, Kenny.
Yeah, you're making direct eye contact and both of your hands were on one shoulder. I don't understand why.
Outside of the money, for those people who are on Slack, you'll find that we get really deep into the rabbit hole. I mean, it's if you want deep Star Trek discussions and questions and make many of us, particularly Grant, look foolish, Slack channel is the place to be.
Why you gotta call me out?
Just saying, rookie.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough. They will make me look foolish.
I also want to...
just pregnant pause on that, Mike.
It was a good pause.
I was looking at the levels. I also want to do something that we haven't done all season and remind everybody that we're part of a podcast network.
We are.
Electric Sweater.
Electric Sweater!
Electricsweater.com.
I never get to be on this. I
know.
Singing it.
That's good. You can find Grant's other show, The TV Dudes. I'm also on that show sometimes. You can find my other show, Mr. Robot O, all about Mr. Robot. And Clyde's show. What's your show about, Clyde?
This is Us with Key and Clyde, and we've got a relaunch of a new show that's coming up that is going to be exciting.
All right. So find all of our podcasts at electricsweater.com. Okay. Let's talk about this episode. For Charon. Let's do some hot takes.
Hot takes!
All right.
Maybe I was a little too close to the mic for that one.
You're good. We bought a compressor. It's fine.
Okay.
Who wants to give me their hot take first?
I want to go first.
Okay.
This episode was amazing.
What?
That's my hot take. I'm done. I'm out.
You know, because Grant says he loved it, I kind of feel like I have to say I didn't.
You do not have to be like that. No.
Do it. Makes for a better podcast.
It has all the drama. I thought Saru was going to die. They lingered on that to the point where I was like, they're not going to do it. They're not. Wait. Are they? holy fuck, are they gonna fucking kill him? Come on. They fleshed out like what his lower body finally looks like. Now we get to see him shirtless. I want a calendar. Don't get rid of the guy.
So you liked it. I'm really surprised you liked it because this had a lot of emotion. We know you're a cold dead robot who doesn't respond to emotion.
I'm nothing but emotion.
Okay.
I'm like Saru. I'm the Saru of our podcast. I'm an empath. Feeling for everything.
Okay.
I don't know if that's true.
You've changed.
I was really digging it. I think that we got to see the relationship between Stamets and Reno, and that was just fantastic.
Amazing.
To have a character that could play off of him and just them butt heads against each other. I love the entire dynamic there. And yeah, I thought it was interesting. I don't know what was going on with Burnham running around all these different rooms, and hopefully you guys can explain some of whatever her mission was there and trying to problem solve. But other than that, everything else was super engaging. I was on board.
Burnham has kind of been, I don't know, out at sea a bit this season, right? She's supposed to be our main character.
Well, I don't think that they've really found who Burnham is ever since the first episode. Mm-hmm. She's been all over the place, but she's also our main character.
Yeah.
They've alluded to so many beginnings of arcs, like she was raised on Vulcan, so she's supposed to be a little bit closed off, but whenever we meet her in the pilot, she's already pretty emotionally aware, but that could be her coming into her emotions and not succeeding, but then clearly, at some point later in the first season, she's exhibiting healthy emotional relationships or something along those lines. This one, she outright cries in a way that feels expressive and honest. I like the concept of Michael Burnham, but everyone else is interesting except for Burnham, which I don't like saying that.
Yeah, I don't like saying that either, but I think I agree with it. But Kenny, you're talking. Give me your hot take on this episode. How'd you feel about it?
It feels like classic Star Trek, which is really, 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 really lovely. It didn't feel like it was trying to reinvent the wheel. It didn't feel like it was trying to be overly clever. I felt like there was a lot of lack of fan service. I was quite pleased, even though the formula was classic Star Trek. They weren't trying to... Well, I guess the episode did start off with number one, which is a whole heck of a lot of fan service. But for some reason, that sat well enough
with me.
It didn't end. It was for 2-3 minutes at the beginning of the episode. Then they went off on this completely isolated adventure that feels Trekkie, and that feels of the spirit of why the heck I like this show, why the heck I like Star Trek in general. More Stamets.
Yeah, a lot more Stamets than last week. Clyde.
So I actually did like this episode quite a bit for a lot of the reasons that people have said. So it did feel like a classic Trek. And I thought, you know, we always talk about whether or not this is kind of mission of the week or are we back to the search for Spock? And it gave us a little bit of both. So it started out with this, let's go get Spock, but then we got...
You're never going to get Spock.
We're never, like it was the last week.
Every episode is like, here's the update on Spock. And we're not going to see him.
We're never going to see him.
What if that's just the rest of the show? What if they spend another 6 years just looking for
Spock? That might be it. But I also like the fact that then we got this old kind of self-contained episode. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was really well done where we got a little bit of character development out of Saru. You know, Grant, you mentioned that you were like, oh, they're going to kill him. I kept thinking there's no way that they're going to like fire Doug Jones. I was like, there's no way.
Right.
But they did such a great job that I had doubts on my own assertion there a couple times. But I was thinking, I love you, Doug, but you're no Anthony Rapp, so I'm not going to write a protest letter. So,
Dang.
Wow. That's not a shot at Doug Jones. I like Doug Jones, but, you know, heart and soul was a little different.
He was in an Oscar-winning movie.
He's great. But that scene between Stamets and Reno was amazing.
First meet?
Well, when they're in the engineering, they first meet and they're just going back and forth insulting each other. Like that was amazing and something that I think the show needed. So I was really excited about that. But on the kind of the other side, I agree with what we're saying typically about Burnham. I think that the first season, it was really clear that she was a star. right? And it really worked with this idea of we've got the main character who the first time is not the captain. But we all think that she's the smartest, the most kind of compelling, the most competent. Well, now it seems much more like an ensemble, and it's not like they're not quite sure what to do.
I am not on board with you guys
really
saying this at all. I still think she's the lead protagonist, and I think she carries a lot of weight on her shoulders and does a fantastic job. She doesn't need to be the one that is always getting a lot of rich character development each episode. And in fact, she really shouldn't. She should be the one who is there now as the most established character, and she can help drive the plot along while we get these little vignettes where they kind of flesh out other people. She's Jack Shepard here, and she doesn't need an episode every other week telling us about her tattoos.
I want her to be Jack Shepard. I mean,
Jack Shepard.
After the
He's
second
one of the
season,
best characters.
After the second season, I didn't really care about Jack Shepard
Man,
that
you're
much.
Wrong. Grant's my boy.
Grant, I agree with you, except that I think you're completely wrong.
Yeah.
Wait, who's this guy?
Hi, I'm Kenny. How
get out of
nice
here.
To meet you. All right, nice to talk to you.
That's my friend
guys.
Kenny.
Here I go. The problem with Burnham, at least for this season, I need to go back and watch the first season through that lens, is I think that Burnham is a reactive character as opposed to being proactive, which if you're going to posit that this is your main character of your show, you need to have your character making some decisions as opposed to having some things thrust upon that person. I think all of the supporting characters have been making active decisions. I think they've been actively moving the plot along. And then, well, last week's episode, it was Burnham split between two guys. It was her split between her relationship with Spock and having to react to her brother and having to deal with her mother, and then having to deal with Ash, two other people that have been moving forward in their own stories, and Burnham is torn between those two things, and all she's been given is just emoting. And this one, she's also not. She didn't drive home the solution for this episode. She's still tied up with her relationship.
Well, she did drive home the solution. She was the one who carried Saru over to drive home the solution.
That doesn't count. Said that she carried him to solve it, though.
Without her, Saru would have died. She was the driving force of this. She was the one who took charge and offered a solution for them to fly to the meteor to find Jet Reno on there. I mean, I feel like she is, in every episode, the one who comes up with the ideas, offers a way to execute them, challenges Pike when he wants to be a little bit too impulsive, and like tempers him. And I mean, I don't know. I'm a big fan of her.
I agree with both of you in a certain sense. I think the truth kind of lies in the middle here, because she has been active almost every episode, but not in a way that I want my lead character to be active. I don't feel that she's growing very much. I don't feel very emotionally engaged with Michael Burnham. And
there's a lot going on. It's so
important. Not because of Sonequa Martin-Green. I think she's doing a good job. But I think maybe we're going to see her grow a little more emotionally and see her challenged and making more decisions and solving more problems once Spock shows
up. Not showing up.
Vaporware.
Guys, I haven't took in my hot take.
What's your hot take, buddy?
I like this episode.
All right, cool.
Yeah,
moving
that was
on.
Hot.
There was
that was a lukewarm take.
Just like where
tepid takes by Mike.
Tepid take. Like just like every other episode this season, there was a shit ton of shit going on in this episode. I mean, we had the fungus attaches itself to Tilly. Jet Reno is spraying sarcasm all over the place. Saru is fucking dying. There's a crazy spear that's fucking up the ship. Spock might be on the spear, maybe. And the bridge turns into the Tower of Babel.
That was so cool.
So much shit going on. Jet Reno becomes a Ghostbuster at one point, which is great.
Yeah.
I thought
don't cross streams.
Even though the action was contained to the ship, you know, like we weren't hopping all over the galaxy. Like last week, we're on the Klingon homeworld, then we're on the ship, and all the action was contained on the ship, but it was still a lot.
Yeah,
but it was all good, and like echoing you, Kenny, and it was really, it felt the plot structure, in a way, felt like classic Star Trek. It was like there is a threat out here in space that we as Starfleet have never come across before, and it's hurting us. But we should try to understand its intent before we just start blasting it. And that reminded me of a lot of classic TNG episodes. I'm sure that goes all the way back to – that kind of structure goes back to the original series. And we even got a call out to – and I think it was Burnham who said this to Pike. Hey, we're, our original mission is to be a science vessel.
Yeah, so I love that part.
Yeah, we got a call out to the – kind of the big theme that we had last season, which was you know, the warship versus the science ship. Which are we?
And it also echoed the initial decision where Burnham wanted to fire first,
yes,
impulsively on the Klingons, and as a result of that, everything kind of spiraled out of control. And now it's like, hold your horses here.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what's really interesting and what kind of moved me was that we again are seeing that this is a kind of a prequel. Right. And so where if you look at something like TNG or Voyager or Deep Space Nine, the code of conduct is really clear. Right. We explore. There are rules. This is the way we behave. But what you saw here was Pike really wanting to go, well, look, we need to fire on this thing because we want to go get Spock. Well, if you think about how this might play out, if this was the Next Generation, they would sacrifice whoever they had to sacrifice for their mission, which is exploration. And I think you saw that actually being formed right in front of our eyes. And that was kind of mm-hmm. that was really kind of cool.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Except for in Pike's eyes, he was shooting on what he thought was just like an inorganic, you know, rock that's right. working with them, right?
Well,
it didn't feel like, well, I'm going to kill an alien civilization here until Burnham and Saru busted in and like, hold up.
Well, because he didn't understand that it was trying to communicate, and he didn't think about, oh, maybe we should try to communicate with this thing. And that was a big theme, obviously, in this episode, communication and understanding.
A good contrast between the mission of Discovery versus Enterprise, right?
If you look at what Picard might do in that situation, he would absolutely probably sacrifice the Enterprise if it meant not destroying a sentient life form.
Maybe.
Well, I mean, that's the issue that Picard ran into with the crystalline entity.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, that's kind of what this episode is, but boy, this one's sure a lot prettier to look at.
You know, that's the thing. You know, even if there's a bad episode, it's still great to watch, you know. And I'm not having my problem anymore with the pacing, even though this episode was pretty quick. I don't know. It felt like it was edited pretty well and the pacing was pretty good.
They found their footing for sure in terms of that speed.
Because the rest of the show is so serialized, you can have these space problems of the week and then it becomes character explorations as opposed to what it was with previous iterations, which is, well, we've got another week of Star Trek to do. There's another problem.
Yeah.
Now you can introduce Jet Reno to Stamets and Tilly and see how they interplay. You can put Saru and Burnham together and see what their dynamic is.
Or very subtly introduce a half a dozen extra characters to the bridge that you've never seen before.
And they all get a line. Like when they're in that little boardroom meeting and like everyone's talking, I was like, oh, this is fantastic.
Everybody's got their SAG card now.
Total TNG moment, sitting around a table just talking about a problem. I absolutely loved it.
It's like, oh, you do have a voice. Interesting.
But it was also funny that as that person, and I don't remember their name, speaks up, they all kind of look and pause like, who are you?
Oh, Commander Khan from yes. The Enterprise.
From the Enterprise, yeah.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, AKA Headgear.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, we're asking the same question. Who are you? And you weren't standing there a minute ago, were you?
And Linus, we got to talk to Linus a lot in this episode.
Linus was so fun. Yeah.
He is from the Orville, but it's good to have
him. It's an Orville character. Yeah. But the line that he gives where he's like, where Saru's saying that he has a cold, and he's like, I had a cold last week. And if you remember, that was like a callback to
when he sneezed in the
first episode of season four. Yeah. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I really appreciated that nod.
Did Linus say last week?
or a couple weeks ago.
Oh, gosh darn it. I really like the idea that the last two episodes, all of this stuff has only happened within a week.
God, these people can be traumatized.
He might have said the other week or something, so it's like vague enough, so who knows.
I think he did say last week.
I thought he did, too.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And if he didn't, then we'll have 116 people correct us.
Great.
More than that. We have more listeners than that.
Oh, it was Commander Nan, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Nan. Did you say Khan?
He did say
I did
Khan.
Say Commander
it
Khan.
It felt a little wrong to me, but, you know, I didn't know what to say.
And now I'm realizing there's another famous Khan in
at Baron, Grant,
and you don't want his wrath.
At Baron Von Grant on Twitter, people.
I actually saw that movie, but I only saw that movie at a Master Pancake riff track thing.
I know. That's not how you watch that movie.
I'm like, that's my context for that movie.
William Shatner was in town like 2 weeks ago screening that movie.
Oh, wow.
He did that last year, too, and I saw it last year. That was fun. Anyway, okay, let's try our best, as we do, to go through this episode chronologically a little bit.
Okay.
But Grant wants to say a thing.
Well, can we start with number one?
Yes,
and can you guys
Rebecca
explain
Romijn.
Me Rebecca Romijn's statements and like what's the significance going on there?
The original number one was played by Majel Barrett in the pilot, the unaired pilot episode of Star Trek called The Cage, right, Kenny?
Yes.
Yeah, and...
Well, it was broken apart to the two-part of The Menagerie. You can watch it. It's neither here nor there.
Yeah. That episode was recut into an episode that was aired during Star Trek's original run, the original series, called The Menagerie. So they use like scenes from The Cage for The Menagerie. Yep. And, yeah. So Pike and...
If you can deep dive nerd stuff, yeah. I feel like this is the avenue for you to feel
sure.
free to do it.
Yeah. So Pike and this version of number one, who was played by Majel Barrett, well, she was the second in charge on the ship.
She was proto Spock.
That's true.
Because in The Cage, Spock was actually pretty emotional. He smiles at one point. And the logical person was number one, the first officer that you saw at the beginning of the episode. She's stern and she's cold, and that's what her deal is, because that's the most characterization that we've gotten with that character canonically.
But she loves habanero sauce.
Well, and burgers and fries.
Yeah, different, yeah. Number one. But yeah, so the idea is just that number one is a traditional kind of nickname, if you will, mm-hmm. for the
second
in charge.
Right. Although she's wearing yellow because she's first in charge while he's away over on this ship, right?
She's on the command track, so at this time in Starfleet canon, yellow is command. So she'll be wearing yellow.
She's in command currently of the Enterprise?
Yeah, yes. While he's gone, okay. And it's being fixed.
Yeah, they're in dry dock, which, assuming they're just going to make it look like the 1960s show.
Right.
Right.
Well, the cool thing about seeing number one here is that when Star Trek first premiered in, was it 66?
Yep.
Okay, 66. Obviously we didn't, the concept of a ship being co-commanded by a female character was a new concept.
Scandalous.
It was scandalous. Yeah. And I'm not sure if this is true or not. Maybe Kenny, you know, I think the pilot was obviously retooled. They got rid of Pike. They brought in Kirk, and they got rid of number one. They brought in Spock as basically the number one. But I think there was a network note that was sent to Gene Roddenberry saying we can't have a woman be in charge of this bridge.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Well,
ridiculous.
The Cage is also it's also more sexist and less sexist.
It is.
Because the Cage specifically comments on how it's really difficult for Pike to work with female officers, present company excluded, and then they look right at number one and she's like, but at the same time, everyone is wearing pants. The women are not in mini skirts.
Right.
They're certainly not as
drastic. Oh, and then
drastic.
They changed that.
Yeah. Whenever the show got going, everyone started, by everyone, I mean only the women were wearing miniskirts. And then by the time the Next Generation rolled around, everyone was wearing miniskirts.
So the idea here was to flesh this character out a little more, who some Star Trek fans do view as kind of a feminist icon.
That's interesting. Like, I also, like, their conversation was a little... I thought there's a few nods. Like they mentioned some engineer, chief engineer Louvier, I want to say was his name.
Oh, have we heard that?
That's actually the first reference of who the engineer is on Pike's Enterprise.
But that was funny because obviously he's like, no other engineer will love the Enterprise as much as this guy.
And that's supposed to be a reference to Scotty?
Scotty and Geordi.
Okay.
I mean, they both love the ship. Yeah.
Yeah. And I thought also it was a little bit of foreshadowing that we're going to get Jet Reno kind of making the appearance in this episode.
Right.
Because she's kind of working alongside the engineering team.
I guess she's just hanging out there now. She's like like a Chief O'Brien, like that's patching shit up.
Hitching a ride.
Yeah.
Hitchhiking through the galaxy.
That's fine. More McCoys everywhere. There need to be more irascible characters.
Very much.
But we also have the number one, her being the number one and like this establishment of their relationship. It seemed like there is some sort of like sexual chemistry going on between her and Pike.
There's sexual chemistry between Pike and like
everyone he looks at.
Yeah. And like the console in front of him.
Yeah. Hands around and his eyes just.
It's all a red herring. It's I feel like if you hone in on that, you're looking at the wrong thing, because I agree. It's with everything.
Yeah.
So he uses just gotta,
all of America.
But there is that point like right near the end where he's like reaching toward her before he goes. Like, he's about to leave. He's like, I gotta go. And he reaches toward her and she slides over this like iPad looking thing to him.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, yes, I'll take this iPad. And I was all like, it just felt to me like she was trying to be like, look, dude. Look at where we are. Don't try and like get all hands or anything.
Really? Did anybody else pick
maybe
up on
I was
that?
Reading
I,
into that.
I read it a little differently.
I just thought it was like a very subtly done thing, but maybe not. Maybe
I was just looking at the pad and noticing that it was designed like the 60s show because it wasn't just completely flat. It was at an angle.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
Oh, yeah.
It was a little bit thicker.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was Windows, not Mac.
I thought it was interesting because what we saw was Pike's relationship, right? We keep getting these little bitty snippets of Pike's relationship with his crew. And so that did two things. One, it helps me understand kind of who he is and the relationship he has with his staff, right? But also it keeps reminding me that he's temporary. Right, mm-hmm. That he has another crew.
He's got another home, another family.
He's really on loan.
A man
he's
of two go, families. Lorca's coming back.
Lorca's got to come back.
No.
He's going to be good, guys.
No.
Well, this was all about masters and apprentices, right? Like the relationships, like Burnham and Saru.
True.
Like, she was basically his number one for a bit. Tilly has kind of fallen under the wing of Stamets to some degree in these past few episodes, like being his little assistant over in the lab. And I thought like introducing her as a little parallel for like a running theme through this episode was interesting. Although like once he just kind of like leaves her to eat her burger or whatever, I'm just like, wait, what's the point of her? Because she doesn't like really pop up like at all.
Yeah, I mean, she delivers some information at the end so they can track Spock's ship, right?
Yeah, she's the fan service at the beginning. Then they get that out and they have a nice self-contained story.
Yeah.
My favorite part of all of that is that they still left her just with the name Number One. The thing that I was so scared of is that they would give her a name, which that does not excite me. I want to keep that character mysterious.
Yeah, we didn't have a moment like in the Solo movie. Like, I have no people. Your name is Solo.
Your last name will be Solo. Fuck you, writers. Fuck you.
Well, we move on to May is now a fungus blob.
She's the thing, right?
Yeah.
John Carpenter's thing going on here.
Yeah, that's right.
She's just this gross look. Oh, it looks so disgusting, that blob.
There was a lot of cool, just like surface shit going on with this plot with the fungus blob trying to attach itself to Killy. Killy. Wow. To Tilly.
Yes.
She has three names now. Captain Killy, Tilly, and Stilly.
And Spike is around, roaming around the hallways.
No.
Name confusion.
One of the more interesting things that came up in this plot line was that the network, it's established that the mycelial network contains life. It's like an incubator. And every time that Stamets goes into the, he does his nipple juicing, and that's the thing we say.
We are back to that.
Yeah, no, I get it. He does his nipple juicing, and it's
in his arms now, Mike. We're off the nipples.
Not everybody has their nipples in the same place, Clyde. And they turn on the spore drive. He's basically ripping a hole through this universe where all these alien life forms live.
They've given a great reason right there in that detail for why they'll eventually have to just give up on the existence of a spore drive and using it, because it goes against the ethical code, presumably, of the Federation.
Right.
Which is so fascinating. I think I was talking to someone else about this and why I love Star Trek. And it's because part of their ethical code, their morality, is so far beyond where we are, is that they've eliminated the greed and
you
the
mean
power.
They actually have ethics?
Well, that too. And so what you're talking about is something, a technology that is so powerful that you can instantly move across the galaxy, and that because it might hurt someone, they ultimately decide not to use it.
Right.
I mean, that's amazing to me.
I mean, we don't know if that's going to be the case. But
we know that they're at some point they're going to stop.
They're laying the track for that.
Yeah.
All of the news that has happened in life recently, and all of the people not taking responsibility for all the terrible things in life, and then cutting to Stamets going, oh, yes, I definitely messed up the mycelial network. Right. I didn't know that I was doing that, but I accept full responsibility. And then going, what can I do to help you?
Well, here's the thing. He didn't
accountability.
Say, here's the thing. He didn't say, I didn't know. He said, I knew.
He's like, I figured.
I figured something was wrong. That was amazing. I mean, you talk about like
ownership.
Ownership, accountability. He said, yeah, I knew something was wrong and I shouldn't have done it and I apologize. Like, way to just step up and say, my bad, right?
Yeah. And he was jumping in there like well after he didn't want to, but because of crazy circumstances and like, you know, it was the rest of the crew's life. I mean, and now they're kind of at this crossroads of like, as long as they still have that technology there, if ever they need that lifeline, they're going to have that moral quandary of do we take that?
Right.
And until they'll have to just outright destroy it so they don't even have that option.
And not just that, there's a whole new universe now to explore if we can figure out how to explore it in this mycelial network. There's a whole, you know, there's living organisms in there. It's interesting.
Right.
Maybe
right.
they can come over and I don't know. It paves the way for new stories to be told outside of the, you know, the regular space that we usually explore in Star Trek.
So they kind of tripped around it, but somehow this alien entity was able to enter the consciousness of Tilly via that little green spore landing on her shoulder.
Right.
And searched through her past for a character that they could in some way replicate as a hallucination for her via the mushroom, psilocybin, whatever. and therefore, they could get her to bend to their will in order to communicate with Stamets to say, quit fucking with the spore drive, right?
Yeah.
Did I roughly kind of summarize that?
I mean, it sounds so much simpler. Pretty. You say it all out loud.
Pretty succinct. Right.
Which brings up a question that I have. So I feel like we're starting to get to this point where we're looking at characters who seem to almost be written out of the show. Is this going to be something that, you know, week after week?
Oh, you mean like because we saw death last season and we almost saw Saru die this season?
Well, I mean, we almost saw Saru die. We, at, you know, early on we thought that Stamets might leave.
We didn't think it was.
No.
We didn't think, but they kind of played that card and now it looks like there's something wrong with Tilly. I'm just wondering, all right, so at some point, are we going to stop almost killing people? And are we going to go the Game of Thrones route where you look up and somebody you care about, Ned Stark, is just out?
They'll kill Pike, I'm sure, at some point.
They can't.
No.
Oh, shit, they can't.
No, what are you talking about?
I don't know how this works.
The next thing you're going to say is, well, you know, they'll kill Kirk. No, they're not. We can't do that.
Well, speaking of death, we almost got a big dramatic death here. Well, kind of what you were talking about earlier, Kenny, the plot in this episode, well, all the plots, you know, just on the surface, it was very fun to watch and very propulsive and entertaining, but the plots really served the emotional growth of all these characters, I thought. It was there to help us grow Saru a whole lot, literally, where he's waking up at the end of the episode saying, I'm a new person. I'm completely different. I've come out of my cocoon. We saw the mechanics of the plot introduce Jet Reno to Stamets, and we had that dynamic, and now we're seeing Jet Reno grow and become part of the crew. That was great. And we're seeing Stamets, his heart grow bigger as well when he's trying to help Tilly. And of course, Pike getting to know everybody in the Enterprise more and everything here.
The Discovery.
Oh, the Discovery. Did I say Enterprise?
Yeah, you're tired.
I'm always tired. like Saru, I'll sleep when I'm dead. but yeah, I thought this gave me a lot what I was looking for, which was the emotion that I think I've been missing in Discovery.
So, Mike, you mentioned that we saw so much growth in character development with Saru's character. I've got to ask again, did the short trek help with that?
Well, no.
No?
I mean, I would have rather read a Wikipedia entry about what happens on Saru's planet than have to watch that short trek again.
I'm not saying that it's great, but
I didn't like that one.
If you just think about the content, though, when he references that meeting with Giorgio and having to say goodbye, and when he references his sister, having seen the short trek, all that stuff kind of hits home.
Sure.
Because you've seen it, even if that episode wasn't great.
You're kind of right. I was thinking that a little bit. I'm like, okay, now that I have this frame of reference that Saru is still, like, despite all that he's seen in traveling with the Federation and being on these starship ships and going all around, despite all of that, he's still kind of locked in this slave herd mentality thing,
right?
Like with these fables about that have been drilled into him about what it means to be, what was the thing called, where the Vahari, is that how you pronounce it?
I think, yeah. So yeah,
this death that they must be sacrificed, like he's still a captive to
a culling, yeah.
this sort of fictionalized mythology that was kind of drilled into all their brains, that like, you guys are going to die, you're going to start feeling a certain way with your paranoia, so you might as well give yourself up to us so that we can have a tasty snack.
Right.
And so he bought into this, and he thought that that's this kind of thing that he was going through, and instead it's like this late life puberty that kind of, mm-hmm. in some way sheds his shackles of fear. And now he's going to be a daredevil.
He can be captain now.
Right.
Like, he can really be
great
captain.
Great point.
He's not going to be so timid about things.
Right. I liked the scenes between him and Michael Burnham a lot, especially when he's kind of accepting his fate and he tells her that he is ashamed of his nature, which is why he never shared it completely with her.
It was such a beautiful scene.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of it was pretty on the nose, but the performances are really what sold it to me. Again, Doug Jones and even Sonequa Martin-Green.
Here's what I got to say.
Yeah.
Doug Jones does deserve a letter from Clyde if he was to leave the show.
Yes.
You better write a fucking letter for Doug Jones, because how does that guy give such an emotive performance? That guy in that one scene showed so much more emotion than the entire career of Mark Wahlberg. The entire career. And he's got a mask on. And just look at his eyes. Look at how he tilts his head.
Yeah.
Like the little subtle movements of his mouth as it quivers. And he's wearing a prosthetic mask thing. It boggles my mind.
Hey, look, my feet hurt every time I see his feet, and knowing that he's on like these stilts and these shoes.
Oh, yeah.
But I'll say this. Grant, here's the deal. If anything happens to Stamets, I'm writing a letter. I'm actually thinking about writing a letter anyway, just in case. But if anything happens to Doug Jones, I think that one's on you. I think you write the Doug Jones letter.
As long as I don't have to do anything.
We'll see.
All right. So what do we think about, I mean, going along this line about Saru, are we looking forward to the arc where he eventually goes back and frees his people from this existence?
Yeah. But I want Anakin to go and tear down all of the...
I mean, if he does that, he will violate the Prime Directive.
I don't know about that, because...
Can you imagine someone in Star Trek violating the Prime Directive?
Oh my God, it never happens.
What?
I'm just saying, like, that's a big hurdle for him.
Well,
can he come back from it?
He had a really good point.
He can now. He doesn't have any ganglia anymore. He don't give a fuck.
The Prime Directive... That shit fell off.
Just the gangly falling off just turns him into a James Dean type, smoking cigarettes.
Seriously,
and going, I don't
balls
care.
Drop. He's in full rebellion mode. He doesn't care anymore.
He's Vin Diesel in Fast Five now. Ride or die. I think he can go back because he was talking to Burnham, talking about General Order 1, and said, well, General Order 1, which is the prime directive, is supposed to keep us from interfering in the natural evolution of a species. But this, my species is not being allowed to evolve naturally. So that's kind of a workaround, isn't it?
No, because you're still violating a natural – you're still violating the control system of a planet that – does not know about the universe at large.
But the other, presumably the predators, do know about the universe and they're enslaving his people.
Yes,
right?
That's correct, but the Federation can't play God.
Right.
The Federation can't dictate its own morals.
So they're setting us up for a story where the crew...
He's
going to go rogue and the crew's going to be like, fuck it, we're with you.
And maybe that's why we don't see
leather jackets.
Yes.
Data's going to come up and say, lock and load.
The Discovery's going to go into a sweet controlled slide across the galaxy.
Well, I think one of the things that we're not talking about, though, is, and this could be really interesting, is when you think about the Federation moving forward, we never see another Kelpian.
No.
And so maybe they're setting it up for to answer the question, why do we not see another Kelpian?
I don't want that question answered.
Damn.
Maybe I don't want that question answered.
Maybe because the rest of them just don't have it in them to be a part of Starfleet, and they're happy just kind of being...
farming kelp.
Abe's Odyssey on their own little odd world or whatever. They're going to be fine just chilling there.
Yeah, I think it'll be fine.
I don't need that question answered. I don't need that answered. Don't need that answered at all. That would be the worst.
Me neither. But... doesn't mean we won't get that question answered.
I feel like Alex Kurtzman is the kind of filmmaker that would go, we need to answer this question. Let's abandon all character development to answer this question.
I thought it was great also seeing that Saru is basically Babelfish. She's Google Translate or whatever. He just knows all languages. And he just dismissively, like, he's like, did any of you guys, like, take a language?
What the hell? I like how it starts in Klingon, and everybody's in Klingon, but then it's Spanish and Italian and all
this
stuff.
Why were the subtitles fucking massive on the screen, though?
Oh, whenever Klingon is subtitled, it's that massive
it's
font.
It's so big. It took like half the screen, and I was looking at that. Why is that gigantic?
The Klingon language does not fuck around, my friend.
Okay, it's just because they're so loud and bombastic. Okay, I get it.
But I think one thing that was really great about that scene, though, is, I mean, how many times do we see Saru actually save the day?
Yeah.
Like, at this point...
And he's dying.
Yeah, he is dying, but yet he steps in to, like, be the guy and, like, the hero of the moment. And so I was like, wow, this is really cool to see Saru do something that's more than just kind of ancillary to what's going on.
Yeah. And I really like the idea that he's so empathic, that the fact that this spear is dying triggers his death, quote unquote, death process.
You know, initially in my notes, before he had said all that, I was like, is Saru such an empath that like if the ship gets sick, he like gets sympathy sick?
Right.
And then it was like, oh no, it's because he's such an empath, like that radiation is making him sick. So it's kind of like the same thing.
We love an empath.
Have we seen that kind of empathic behavior from Saru before though? Or is it just the writers going, empathic. Let's call lunch.
They have laid the groundwork, I think, for him just being an emotional character and sensing what others need or what others are going to do.
Yeah.
But never to the extent where it affects him physically. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure that it's earned whenever Burnham says you're the most empathic person.
I felt that, actually. I did feel it.
I believe the emotion, but I don't believe the facts.
It seems like his impulse is a little bit more to be concerned about others than it is to assume everyone is an aggressor, which is ironic given that he's a natural prey, it seems like, in his own society, and that's how he's raised. He should be a little bit more fearful of everyone, but I think a lot of the first season kind of showed that he would steer on the side of caution in a lot of scenarios and be like, whoa, we shouldn't necessarily jump to our baser instincts of hostility.
So, I agree with Grant in that I think what we've seen, I know, rarely something I say, but I think what we've seen is we've seen Saru show tremendous amounts of compassion for his fellow crew, even if you go back to season one where Burnham's kind of come into this, you know, this ship as a, you know, almost as a traitor and treasonous. And he's protective of the ship, but he's also pretty compassionate to her. So I think we see that, but I don't know that I ever made the jump to, oh, he's an empath. And yeah. What that means as people who follow Star Trek, when you hear that word, oh, they're an empath, you're like, oh, well, that's kind of a superpower.
Yeah, I guess that is kind of different for Star Trek.
Yeah, he's quite sensitive.
He's not Deanna Troi.
Right.
But luckily he is now, so I'm looking forward to him walking around in a cat suit for the rest of the show.
I don't want to see it.
What did you guys think of seeing his chest, like his whole body makeup? Didn't it look a little plasticky?
Sad that he didn't go pantsless, too. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Double standard, man. We've seen a naked Klingon. Yeah. Why can't we see a completely naked male Kelpian?
I wasn't particularly happy about that either.
Oh, no. Terrible decision. It was abominable.
Klingon guys, my friend Hyde Clanes has drawn a lot of pictures of naked Saru. If you guys want to see that.
Yeah.
I'd love to. I'd love to.
Hyde Clanes is quite the artist. Wouldn't you agree, Clyde?
I cannot.
You've seen him.
I've had nightmares about some of them. I mean,
you've gotten writer's cramp or drawer's cramp.
Hyde
some of
Clanes
them.
Is a
writer's cramp. Yeah,
it's a monster. He's just a monster. His imagination is way too wild.
Enough of this. So, Tilly's favorite song being David Bowie's "Space Odyssey." Awesome or too on the nose?
On the nose, but also I found myself so affected by that.
Correct
as
answer.
Well. It's too much, but also I found myself clutching my chest, which is a weird thing to admit.
Yeah.
I like that all of our current contemporary culture has been so profound that it affects them way in the future. Like what was her name? Reno referencing
Prince.
Yeah. And I'm like, yep, it's our generation that is making all the interesting music and shit.
So. That was what I walked away with thinking, like, okay. So we're really thinking that 200-300 years in the future, Bowie song is really favorite
song? They did this last season. We complained a little bit about it, too. They made some other references that were like around this generation. Like, hold up.
It's continuing the idea that everyone in the 21st century is obsessed with 20th century pop culture.
Yeah.
Like, at least it wasn't as bad as, like, Tom Paris watching fucking cartoons from, you know, the 30s or whatever.
Yeah, it's weird that this...
Grant stares at me blankly. Who's Tom Paris?
I don't know. No one was going to, like, say anything.
It's like the coolest pilot ever.
No.
I'm joking.
It's a Voyager character.
I'm joking. I'm joking.
It's like if someone took white bread and put a leather jacket on it and went, you like this, right? You like things in leather jackets, right?
It's like when George Michael in Arrested Development got a leather jacket. Okay.
Kind of.
It's like if Parker Lewis can't lose, join the... The Voyager.
Wow, sweet. That's reference. A reference.
Okay.
He did. He was in a Star Trek fan film.
Oh, my.
Yeah, he was. Corey Nevin or whatever?
Corin
Nemec. I was close.
Was that one of those Walter Koenig ones?
Yeah, Star Trek Renegades.
Yeah, I've seen that. It's bad.
It's real bad.
Everybody Google Star Trek Renegades. Watch
don't
that
do
shit.
It. Don't
it's
do it.
Real bad. It's got Edward Furlong.
Whoa, yeah.
Wow. I once asked that guy to tell me a drunk story, and he couldn't do it.
Was he drunk?
I used to do a show called The Greatest Drunk Stories Ever Told. And so I went up and asked him, like, hey, can you you want to do like an interview? And he looks around and he's like, man. If you know his past, you just get fucked up all the time.
Right.
He has a big like drug problem. Yeah. He looks around and like almost like he's looking at his publicist or something. And he's like, I wish I could. I just can't.
I'll get in
like,
trouble.
I was like, fair enough, buddy. All right. Talk to you later.
Edward Furlong belongs in Star Trek.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Cool. I would be down to see him again. I miss that guy, sort of.
What do we think about we have this wonderful emotional arc with Saru almost dying, with Burnham being there for what she thinks are going to be his final moments. She admits to him, he admits to her everything that he's ashamed of about where he comes from and who he presumed he was. She admits to him, I love you. You're my family. I love you so much. I can't assist you with this.
He is the real brother to her.
Yes.
That Spock isn't. It's like the relationship that the hole is filled.
They pretty much, become... okay. Moving on. They pretty much become each other's siblings, which is great. And then he encourages her to not shy away from confronting Spock, which is what she was going to do. It was set up at the beginning of the episode that she doesn't want anything to do with Spock because he probably won't want anything to do with her at this point. That to me felt kind of shoehorned in. A lot of the Spock stuff to me now is just feeling shoehorned in. Like, this could have been a great self-contained episode about these characters, but
she could have drawn their own parallel without the line.
Yeah, but then they make it about Spock.
And because we're never going to see Spock, it really doesn't matter.
I thought we were going to see him at the end of this episode.
There's no way, Mike. I looked and was like, there's no way. The minute that they were like, oh, he's still going and we're stuck in the stasis field, I was like, there goes any chance that we're going to see Spock.
He has a beard. Maybe he's mirror Spock.
That would be...
Whoa. That would explain That'd why he right. killed
worst.
People.
That would be the worst. I would hate that. I would jump out of the window.
So here's the thing. So if you listen to Kurtzman talk, and they've kind of introduced that Spock was her brother, kind of early in the first episode. And so then they had to say, okay, well, we've got to explain why she doesn't have this relationship with Spock.
No.
I mean, maybe you didn't, but he's kind of gone that way.
Yeah.
And so now that we're kind of moving down that road, the truth of the matter is, at no point does Spock ever mention having a sister. So I'm led to believe that they're never going to reconcile this relationship.
They didn't patch it up. They're probably not going to. I mean, I'm okay with that.
He doesn't. Spock never mentioned his parents to Kirk or anybody until they showed up on the Enterprise. Mm-hmm. Spock never mentioned his brother until he showed up in Star Trek V, the best Star Trek movie of all time.
That is a fact.
I hope Cybok shows up in
I don't even know if you guys are joking
that's,
or not.
That's going to be the third season. Yeah. Brenna's going to have to deal with her other brother.
Cybok.
But also, like, you know, speaking of the character growth of Burnham, first season, episode one, Burnham, if Sarah was like, I'm going to need you to chop that off, she's like, what? Chop. Already did it. Done. I have no emotion. I'm a fucking robot. I don't give a fuck. Logic. True. If you ask me to do that, done.
Or be like, I didn't mean all of that.
Other possibility is if she's super logical, she could go, well, let's get a second opinion on this shit because right. Don't just hold me up in this room and appeal to my emotion to cut off your ganglia. I don't know. It seems weird to me that like they just had this little private moment and like everyone else is like, and Pike, who knew what's going on, is just like, I'm just going to leave you two to handle whatever death throws are going on.
They stood for him and acknowledged it.
It was great.
It's all good.
That was a beautiful movie moment. But why not have the doctor cut off the ganglia? I mean, you would think that, I don't know.
Well, because it's such a personal moment, and mm-hmm. the doctor that we've seen so far is another McCoy-ish type character. I mean, I guess that's three McCoy types that are on Discovery so
Who's
far.
Who's the real McCoy?
Reno's my favorite.
She makes McCoy look like he's cuddly. I mean, by comparison, she's pretty cold.
If you're going to go through a Kelpian death ritual, which sounds very Star Trek whenever I say it out loud, you're going to want to do that with someone that's very close to you, who's closer to Saru than Burnham.
Yeah, but I was just thinking she's, you know, wielded a laser scalpel, you know, often. She's likely not to, you know, cut off an ear or something.
Yeah.
I like that we're kind of using some old tech here. It's like, I don't think she had a laser scalpel. She actually had a knife. And then Jet Reno, when they had to literally drill a hole in Tilly's brain, they used
machinist shit going on.
Yeah, they used like an old drill from Sears.
Yeah.
It did look like a nice like drill. I was like, wow, man, that's a pretty good drill there for, you know.
Also,
2015.
It's kind of fucked up. They don't do anything to like really prep her. Like, hey, sing a song real quick.
That's true.
Yeah, that's cold-blooded.
Yeah.
I mean, after all this, I'm thinking Tilly's probably going to be looking at Stamets like, I can't deal with you. Every time I talk to you, I get hurt. Like, you either drill a hole in my head or you just go, this might hurt, and you rip fungus out of me.
Stamets is going to be her trigger.
I would like that art, though, because it's Tilly started off at such a – Tilly started off at an 11, and then this season – they're dialing her down realistically, but that optimism is still so prevalent. But also, she got a hole drilled in her head today,
and she got eaten by a fungus blob.
Yeah, which that's going to happen.
So they found, according to Pike, the galaxy's Dead Sea Scrolls. I'm looking at the two major Star Trek fans in the room. What do you think?
Don't call me a nerd, man.
What do you think is contained in there, you fucking nerds?
I guess no information about the Kurlan Nescar.
Whoa. Is that a deep reference, or did you just like have a stroke?
Sure.
Mic drop. Boom.
Don't drop that mic.
Sure. The Kurlan Nescar is this piece of archaeology that Picard gets from his archaeology teacher, who finds it and says, "We're going to find the missing piece. We're going to find out where all life came from."
I think I remember that.
All the classic races in Star Trek, except for maybe the Vulcans, get together, and it's a race against time to try and put the final piece together because they think it's going to turn out to be a weapon. Turns out it's just a holographic message going, "We seeded all of the planets with our DNA in hopes that life would happen. And hopefully you've learned to work together."
Right, yeah. There's like this ancient race that jizzed all over the galaxy, and that's where all the species came from.
Really? Is that the way to describe that? This is a kids' podcast we're doing here.
There are no kids listening to this.
It's a kids-friendly podcast, I thought.
Do your kids listen to this?
Always.
Oh, you're bad.
They got to hear dad's voice.
You're a bad father.
I'm terrible. The worst.
It's like he's talking to us.
What does jizz all over the universe mean, Dad? Why do you talk like that? What do you mean, Dad? Just stop. You're adopted.
You have a son named Cletus. Okay.
So the Kurlan Nescar is no information in those Dead Sea Scrolls.
I'm gonna go kind of in line with what I think mostly happens with Discovery. Is I'm guessing that most of that information does not find its way back to Starfleet. Mm. And whatever happens to Discovery, we know that it, you know, according to the short trek, it ends up in a nebula somewhere, never to be seen again.
What if all that information converts into an entity that becomes their onboard computer that we see in that futuristic
Calypso. Calypso. Yeah, that'd be cool.
I'll go one further because we know that Picard is an archaeology nerd. And they said that it's going to take centuries to uncover this information. They're doing a Picard show. What if... I mean, that would be the worst idea, but if they could, they would connect those two together, and Picard goes off on some chase through the galaxy trying to solve the Dead Sea Scroll clues.
I'd be okay with that.
That sounds actually kind of awesome. I don't know why that's like a terrible
idea. Cool. That's a pretty good idea. I'm watching that show.
Because first off, I don't want a Picard show. That's the worst idea. And
get out of here.
Okay. See you guys. Love this pleasure. No, they finished. They finished that story. There's no need for a Picard show.
He's going to have an evil mustache and beard because he's mirrorverse Picard.
No. Get out of here.
Okay. I got to agree with that a little bit only because I think what we want, everybody who says they want a Picard show, I feel like what they're really saying is they want more TNG. And this is not going to be that. And I think anyone who's hoping for that or hoping to see even that Picard and that chemistry is going to be sadly disappointed. This is going to be a new venue for Patrick Stewart, who's going to be playing a different version, I think, of Jean-Luc Picard. It's going to be its own thing.
Yeah.
And so anybody who is looking for that is going to have to come into it.
I'm not looking for anything. I never watched TNG. I don't know.
We're going to make you watch it.
You're going to love it.
Help him, Mike.
The best thing about Picard is that he's really boring, which is one of my favorite things.
Yeah.
Cool.
He's awesome. He's a guy who's like, "Hold on. Are you sure that we haven't talked about it enough?"
And is that really true?
Guys, let's go to the conference room for half an hour, please. Yeah, that's Picard.
Picard literally told his crew about the crystalline entity, which is literally a planet eater. He goes to his crew, "Are you sure there's no way we can't talk to it? Let's make sure that we exhaust every possible option before we destroy this thing that has destroyed billions of planets."
It's inspiring.
He's the best,
yes.
I guess.
Yeah, but the bad thing with Patrick Stewart is that he goes, "Right, but what if, hold on a second, what if Picard swung from this pipe real quick?" What if Picard took this rifle and he shot the Borg Queen in the head?
That's true.
Well, he snapped the Borg Queen's spine in half.
Seriously?
Seriously.
Hell yeah.
Okay, these things kind of sound awesome. It sound like two different people. But
it is. Kind of. Most definitely.
Okay.
he goes, what if I got to fight Tom Hardy?
That's true.
Tom Hardy?
Yeah, Tom Hardy plays a clone of Picard in one of the movies.
Oh, wait. I think I saw something about that. Something Beyond. Was it Star Trek Beyond?
No.
Or
no.
Something? I don't know. Just if that stop. Is. Okay. Can we talk a little bit more about the relationship with Stamets and Reno, and Reno kind of popping in on the scene?
Reno, and then they got high and had an acid trip. It was great.
Yeah, they all became like Battle Alita.
Alita, Battle Angels.
Yeah, I don't know what that is. no, but like there's this one scene where she comes in and she's just like casually trying to fix something. I don't even know what she's doing, but she just kind of bebops in there. And while she's doing that, she just starts talking shit with Stamets, who's like, the fuck? Oh, you want to talk some shit?
But they had a nice little debate, yeah.
I like it a lot because it seems like everyone is giving him a lot of – everyone's being very gentle with Stamets, and maybe he needs someone who's going to – intellectually challenge him, but also just be a dick to him. Maybe like his sort of personality needs someone who just like pushes back against him and be like, quit being a baby, shut up, pull your pants, we're gonna take care of this. You finally have a brilliant idea. Like, he needs someone who actually spars and challenges him in a way, and I think it's great to see her do that. But I also really love that whole part where she just like casually asks for a piece of gum from Tilly. Yeah. And she's like, she's just doing like a Brad Pitt thing where she likes to eat food while she's doing the same.
Well, no, she actually uses it
exactly
to fix something.
It was like for a purpose.
Yeah, right. That's right.
She's so crazy. She pulls it out. A starship.
And she's like talking about, give me duct tape. I'll just fix everything with duct tape.
Yeah,
and
the gum.
Sure enough, she uses gum to fix something.
The gum, the drill, the duct tape. I love all that.
Yeah, she's kind of like low tech, like just like whatever it takes.
He called her a grease monkey, which is perfect.
I mean, her character is a miracle worker, way more than we ever saw Scotty be a miracle worker.
Well, yeah, but true. I mean, I think when you think about it, Star Trek has always had this engineer who does stuff that is unconventional, that if there's a problem, you know, whether it's anyone from Scotty to Geordi to B'Elanna Torres to whoever, to even, you know, O'Brien, they get it done when you think they're not going to get it done. And while Stamets has kind of played that role, he plays it much more like an environmentalist, right? Well, he's really looking for, like he put it, the solar option, we can't do it, where Reno is just like, no, I'm going to talk to you and I'm going to talk crap to you all day while I'm fixing this, and I'm not even looking at what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was the point where they're both trying to discuss what's going on with the entity, the spore entity, like overtaking Tilly, and he's trying to look at it from a little bit more of a passive stance of like, well, maybe it's just trying to give her a sedative to calm her down. And right. I like that Reno's this kind of voice of reason, or it's just trying to knock her out so it can take over her.
Right.
And it seems like she might have been a little bit more right now that we see we can sympathize with this alien to the extent of like they're desperate and so they're trying to save their own species, but they're also a hostile entity on the ship. And I mean, for all we know, Tilly is a captive Manchurian candidate in some regard here now.
Mm-hmm.
Like she's been compromised. Even when they pull her out, are they sure that like some of that hasn't once again infected her and she might be walking around with some triggers?
Well, I just want more Jet Reno. I want more Tignataro on this show. I would love for her to be regular.
I'm hoping for that, Mike, because I think what she brings and what this character brings is something that the show just hasn't had, actually probably since, and I'm going to say it and you're going to love it, Lorca, right?
I love Lorca.
It's that sharp-witted, that almost kind of jaded view that gives you a complete picture. And so I think she's that edge that this crew has been missing.
Yeah.
And so of all the half dozen randos that showed up in this episode, she's the one I'm hoping that sticks.
Yeah. But I feel like Stamets fulfills a very similar dynamic. as well. I love me some Jet Reno. Jet Reno's lovely. And Tig Notaro. Oh, yeah. But it's also, I guess, two sides of the same coin.
It didn't feel that redundant to me. Like you guys were saying earlier, it felt like they challenged each other, which is nice. That's partly her function here, yeah. I think, to activate him a little bit.
They are ideologically different. One is more mechanical, one is more organic.
But yeah. I see what you're saying. Like, Stamets also has that quick-witted, like, I'm going to make all these comments. But I think what happens is when Stamets is making those comments to Burnham or Tilly or Pike, he just seems kind of like a jerk. But when it's him and Reno, then it's like, okay, this is witty banter that actually is going to result in somebody learning something.
He cows a little bit. He stammers. Stamets stammers.
Right.
I don't get it.
Can you explain your joke and make it funnier?
Alliteration.
Oh, I get it now.
Very funny.
Yes.
Man.
Thank you.
Okay, we do have a couple of listener comments I want to get to. And
what, we're done?
I don't know. Are we?
This has been fun.
Dude, what? Am I not going to go through my checklist of last comments?
Grant's iPhone notes, go.
All right. One thing I wanted to point out is Spock is a fugitive and Burnham was a fugitive too. They have that sibling thing in common. The ancient organic like planet living thing.
Yeah.
Was it kind of a glowing red? Like, was this supposed to be one of the seven?
I, that's what I thought at like, first. Points,
and
this
one was dying, and maybe like all seven of them are eventually dying, but this one was able to like download all their info.
Yeah.
That wasn't clear.
I felt like Pike would have had a completely different reaction to it if it was one of those seven. But I was wondering that too.
Yeah. Okay. I also wanted to give a little shout out to the Linus character, the reactions that alien made when everyone started talking Klingon back and forth, and he's just like looking back and forth, was also really funny. And I'm just really impressed with how emotive aliens can be wearing all these masks.
Very Del Toro-esque.
It was ridiculous to me to see that Captain Pike went to help Saru go to the medical bay, and then he's like helping like to hold a wounded person for a bit, doing some light surgery or whatever, and then he's just right back on the ship. What's going on? You're the captain.
He's a nice guy.
He's very nice.
He cares about her.
You're the captain. Let someone else hold the
multiple skills.
That's just Star Trek. The captain for some reason puts himself in the middle of all of the action as opposed to in the most tactically safe space.
Yeah. This is kind of what I'm getting a feel for, is just one of those tropes of Star Trek.
Yes.
The last thing I wanted to point out, and this is actually a callback to our last episode, or possibly we discussed this off mic. I'm not really sure. But Amanda, her mother, we were curious about the last name or whether or not she had one. I was looking online.
It's Grayson.
I knew that, but yeah. I forgot about it.
Amanda Grayson. And that's, you know, right. What's fascinating about it?
Is there a lost parallel?
She talked about her dad being a real asshole. Mm-hmm. He was a real dick.
Dick Grayson.
No. Shut the fuck up.
I think it's a shared universe is all I'm saying.
At least it wasn't a Lost reference.
It's a shared universe with Lost and with Batman.
All right, we'll be right back with some listener comments. And we're back with some quick listener comments. And also want to give a shout out to all of our new patrons.
We got new ones.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Season 2 patrons. John S., Art S., Dylan D., Charlotte S., and Jacqueline L.
Must be a lot of siblings. They all have that.
Lots of S's.
Same S.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. We really appreciate that. And listener, if you want to become a patron, go to StarTrekPod.com. Actually, no. Where do we go?
Patreon.com/StarTrekPod.
That's it. You hear that, Kenny?
Yeah.
That's where you go to pay us money.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Or to talk to us.
We have him on as a guest on an episode and he has to pay money for it. That sounds...
Yes.
It sounds a little fucked up.
Yes. You okay?
Yeah, I'm just getting really emotional over here.
Finally, the episode's hitting.
I get it.
He's okay. He's going to live.
Grant was right the whole time.
No one says that.
Kenny, you can't say that. Those are words that we don't say, Grant and right.
My head is expanding my ego.
All right, listener comments. One of our favorite listeners, Jonathan Huffnagel, says, "Hey guys, I just finished listening to your amazing audio for episode 2 of Star Trek Discovery. Great to see you guys back at it. I thought I may offer an idea. Do you think..." Oh, I think we've read this before. Not this comment, but a similar. "Do you think that the Red Angel could be some sort of proto-Q? Q do take an interest in humanity and reveal themselves at the start of TNG, so maybe this is a precursor to that interest. Hell, the Discovery's weird jumping may have caught their attention as species to focus on or perhaps test a little anonymously." I think we talked about this concept before, but...
I don't know what Q is, I'm going to say absolutely this is Q.
100%. We explained Q to you.
Well, my answer to Huffnagel and to Grant will be the same. Thank you so much for your inquiry, but no, it's not Q.
Not Q. Q is John Delancey, who was Christian Ritter's father in Breaking Bad.
You remember the co-star of the UPN television show Legend?
Yeah, that guy.
Everyone
knows what's going on.
You guys know Legend. Everyone knows Legend.
I think he's on Days of Our Lives as well.
Grant.
Okay, so he can look humanoid, but he also potentially could look in a different way. Is he a shapeshifter?
Yeah. He's an omnipotent being that can go anywhere, do anything, and for fun they like to mess with humans.
Yeah, he likes to fuck around.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, but this just couldn't possibly be that, is what you guys are saying? Absolutely 100%.
Okay, so if we're actually going to entertain this idea, I would say this. If it was a Q would really want to be front and center and get all the credit for doing this. And we're, you know, 4 episodes in and we haven't actually seen them go, "Ha ha, look what I've done."
Is it canon that all Q are glory hogs? Or can some,
I mean, we've only seen like 3 of them. Subtle?
Yeah.
Maybe. It's not Q.
I'm just pushing buttons so you guys can explain a little more of what this Q thing is.
I feel like that would shrink the universe in the Star Wars way. And I want new things out of my Star Trek. That's one of the great things about Star Trek. There's so much.
All right, cool.
One more listener comment on Twitter. At Occam's Dragon says, and I quote, "What time is the shoe available to stream?"
The Primate Show.
What time, Kenny? You want to take this one?
Yeah, 7.5.
Okay, there you go, Occam's Dragon. 7.5.
It is. It's 8 p.m. here, right? 8 p.m. Central Standard Time.
I think it's 7:30 Central.
Is it 7:30?
Yeah,
7:30 Central.
Seven and a half.
7.5 down the middle. Mm-hmm. 8.5 for the right foot.
But this
nice. Okay.
This question's about a shoe, and then Takako. Nagmo makes a lot of great points on our Facebook page. I recommend everybody check that out. But she also asks, "Hey guys, where's Ashley?" Ashley, maybe you didn't listen to our first season, Kenny. Ashley was our 4th co-host. And Takaka says, "I confess I'm missing the female perspective she offered. One of the reasons I like this podcast is that you offer the perspective of a person who is new to Star Trek, like Grant, and of a female Star Trek fan. I hope she comes back to the podcast soon, and if not, I hope you find an opportunity to add a female POV."
Thank you, Kenny. Once again.
Yeah, I'm just really glad that I could add the white male perspective to the show. Really pleased with that.
I thought that was my role.
We are leaving the 4 chair open to some guests this season. We're hoping to get a female POV in here. And we're not – Ashley is might join us again.
She might. Ashley is currently doing a lot of studies right now because she's finishing up her degree. Takes a lot of time, and like currently, like on top of doing all of that and doing a job, she's like doing teacher's aid kind of stuff. And so it's been a huge time suck, and so she doesn't have time to fully dedicate to nerding out on Trek like the rest of us. And we sorely miss her. But hopefully she'll be able to warp back in here at some point.
I mean, that's another great reason to donate to the Patreon, right? To be able to bring great people like Ashley and help financially offset the costs so she could come into the studio more, so she has more time for herself.
Mm-hmm. If we could just
pay her so that she doesn't need that degree.
Yeah.
Right. She doesn't need to work for NASA.
No, I'm glad. Yeah.
And Grant, she would transport back to the studio.
Shit. You know, warp. I'm so proud of myself.
What did you say?
I said, warp. Warp back? I don't know.
That's okay. That works.
Not unless she's in a ship.
He should have said spore jump back.
Yeah.
Okay, that would have worked.
Kenny, thank you for being here tonight.
Thank you for letting me come play with you guys.
And once again, what's your show and where can people find it?
You can listen to new episodes of the Guilty Treasures podcast, where the Guilty Treasures with an exclamation mark, because unfortunately we found out that there's another Guilty Treasures podcast several weeks after we started already with the name. Guilty Treasures with an exclamation mark, available wherever podcasts are found. And additionally, I do comedy all over the city. My next show is February 14th at the Institution Theater.
Right here in Austin.
Awesome.
Yeah. All right. Visit us at StarTrekPod.com. I don't think we need to pimp to Patreon again, do we?
No. People know where it is.
All right. People know where it is.
We've guilted the people enough.
Thanks for listening. Live long and prosper.